You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follow up. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer. Pick a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder.
Right, you guessed it. Long bumper music, not a good sign. Lamont is nowhere to be found. Yeah, and writers wonder why nobody likes him. Like, I just saw a poll in the media, like, media members held in low regard by the general public. And this is the reason why. Probably not, but it suits me right now. We'll see if he extracts himself with, because I talked to him on Friday, with whatever he's involved with, and we'll see if he can, join us here momentarily. So yeah, he was in Afghanistan, was down in Helmand Province, by the by, and so wanted to talk to him on the heels of, what Roger Turner said, so. Get his thoughts and observations on what he's seen. Interesting stuff going on in the Middle East. Okay, yesterday, there was discussions about some kind of strike in Syria, and so if you go to should I throw it up on the blog? Because the explosion is awesome. Yeah, it's a gigantic explosion. Anyway, so there was reports like late yesterday afternoon that there was some kind of attack underway in Syria. But there wasn't a whole lot of information that came out of it later. So who does that lead you to believe it is? It's the Israelis, right? Because they're not talking about it. That's how they do it. So, anyway, this is out of Beirut. But the pictures are incredible. Like, I don't know what they hit, but it's a huge fireball. Missile strikes at two Iran-linked bases in Syria triggered huge explosions overnight, killed dozens of pro-government fighters, a monitor group said Monday, in an attack seen as the latest blow struck by Israel in a shadow war to contain Iranian influence in the war-ravaged country. Syrian state media reported major blasts through parts of Hama and Aleppo provinces at around 10:30 p.m. Sunday. It did not identify the targets, but other pro-government media outlets said that there were weapons depots for both the Syrian regime and Iranian forces. While state-owned Daily Tishreen said the missiles were launched from U.S. and British military bases, this is Syrian state, analysts said that the most likely source was Israel, which has acknowledged it has carried out more than 100 military strikes in Syria during the civil war. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a British-based monitoring group, said Israel carried out the attacks but gave no further information, no further details on its information. It said that at least one of the attacks hit an arms depot for surface-to-air missiles at a base in northern Syria known as Brigade 47. This is interesting. Not interesting, but it's interesting the way that the Israelis say it. Iran has threatened to retaliate against Israel following the death of seven of its officers in an Israeli airstrike on the T-4 military base in Syria earlier this month. Speaking in Washington on Sunday, Israeli Defense Minister, Israeli Defense Minister Avigdor, that would be short to Avi, but it's A-V-I-G-D-O-R. Avigdor Lieberman said Israel has three problems. This is classic, by the way. Iran. And no kidding. But the explosion, holy smokes, man, it's gigantic. Now, so that went on late yesterday afternoon. So again, the wars between those two is coming. Unless Iran, you know, for whatever reason now decides it will reverse course. Kind of interesting though. I see the President of the United States. This is just me. This is Mike McNamara talking. He's beginning to understand the power of the United States. Whether it be the power of the United States relative to its NATO allies and their defense spending, whether it be the power of the United States relative to renegotiating things that are more in our favor and not going along with the status quo and not bowing to nations we shouldn't bow to, like China, like Russia, like Iran, like North Korea, and bargaining from a position of strength and not being afraid to do that. And what it teaches us is less globalism, more Americanism is a better thing for the world. Because more globalism means more of China, means more of Russia and all their bullshit. And I think, North Korea is arguably, the thorniest problem the United States had? If that somehow or other comes to some kind of positive, first of all, ending the Korean War would be huge. Yeah, let's just say that. Ending the Korean War would be a huge first step. And then where does it go after that? What's interesting, though, today in the article, again, Stars and Stripes. Go figure. Stars and Stripes. You know, but the one thing about Stars and Stripes is it has correspondents all over the world. All over the world. Because it covers the United States military all over the world. Interesting. So one of the things he says is that his transportation infrastructure is embarrassing. So if he's talking economically about North Korea, then that means he has other designs for his nation. So, again, I'm a skeptic. He's going to work so hard to cultivate that image, and then he's going to stand it down in order to gain what? Will he do it based on a verifiable peace treaty and a pledge from South Korea? I mean, who wants to invade North Korea? Good God, if you invaded it, you'd own it, right? Then you'd have to go through all the problem of trying to rebuild it. Let him do that. Yeah, we've learned that lesson a few times in our history. But I think, you know, the world would be extremely sympathetic. Yeah. President Moon, Donald Trump should get the Nobel Prize. God, could you imagine if he won the Nobel Prize? It would be, there'd be a conniption fit in the country. A collective conniption fit. So the, anyway, Mike Pompeo, our brand new Secretary of State, is in the region, right? He went to Saudi Arabia, and I believe yesterday he was in Israel. So, Secretary Pompeo, he's not afraid to be blunt, okay? This is from Amman, Jordan. So he's pictured meeting with King Abdullah of Jordan. King Abdullah, the most far-sighted, probably, of the Middle East monarchs. He is, and again, he has to be, or else you're going to lose the franchise. He deals with the Syrian refugee crisis every day that threatens to overwhelm Jordan. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo Monday said Israel has the right to defend itself after a month of deadly clashes at the fencing dividing the country and the Gaza Strip, calling on both sides to resume political engagement. He landed in Amman on Sunday after stops in Brussels, NATO, Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, Tel Aviv, Israel. Quote, we do believe the Israelis have the right to defend themselves, and we're fully supportive of that. So we've all seen the videotape coming from a fence. You know, it's amazing the way the world has changed, right? 20 years ago, would they have ever done that? No. You want to know why? Nobody's going to see the video. Nobody's going to be there to film it. So the... So it ain't happening. But now the power of video is seen all around the world. But I don't know. I don't know. You know, it doesn't seem like who's lining up to side with the Palestinians. They have no friend in Washington, D.C. anymore. The United States has come down squarely on the side of Israel. You have countries like Saudi Arabia. Because of the Iranian presence in Syria, the Iranian presence in Iraq, is cozying up to Israel. And they see, a lot of them see Hamas as a proxy of Iran, and so they want nothing to do with them. Yeah, so interesting stuff. And Mike Pompeo is... He's a smart guy, but I think he's an old bullshit guy. With respect to the two-state solution, the parties will ultimately make the decision about what the right resolution is. We're certainly open to a two-party solution. That's a likely outcome. We certainly believe that the Israelis and the Palestinians need to have political engagement. We urge the Palestinians to return to their political dialogue. The U.S. goals for Syria are clear. Defeat ISIS, ensure the safe delivery of humanitarian aid, de-escalate the violence, deter the use of chemical weapons, and ultimately support a political resolution to the conflict. We remain fully committed to the ceasefire agreement in southwest Syria. The United States strongly supports the UN efforts in Geneva to end the conflict, which has gone on for far too many years. So anyway, Mike Pompeo out and about in the world. So again, he's no stranger to those countries, having worked for the CIA, and so, but a little bit different tone with he and John Bolton in charge. Now, but I go back to my original point, and that is Donald Trump, deal maker, right? Deal maker guy. So, I think one of the things he's learned is like, look, how do you make deals? By being weak? No. You don't make deals from a position of weakness. You make deals from a position of strength. And I hope that NATO is paying attention. I hope that our allies in the Pacific are paying attention. And again, the free nations of the world need to get their shit together. And again, chief among them, in my opinion, worst among us is Germany. Germany has done more to destabilize Europe, by de-arming itself and its refugee policies. And now you're seeing the backlash all across Europe. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to see if Lamoth is available. So more of Allmurin Radio on a Monday. That is kind of working out like Mondays work out. No, normally they don't, but today it is. So, with all of that said, don't touch that dial. More of Allmurin Radio coming up next as we see if we can track down freshly back from Afghanistan the one and only Dan Lamoth. So whatever you do. Hang with us. More of this program coming up next.
Arriving at Quezon was a real experience because the plane came in hard and fast, did an immediate U-turn, never stopping, spun a U-turn at the end of the runway, and body bags were being thrown in as you tried to go out the back tailgate. And there were people waving in trenches at the very end, telling you to get over there, get over there, get over there. And you're carrying your duffel bag, and you don't really know what's going on. Why? What's the hurry? Well, then rockets started coming in.
When the ammo dump exploded, man, we thought it was atomic.
Our bunker was right kind of in front of the ammo dump. We was on the garbage pit side. And that first round went in. It was spooky. I didn't know what the hell was happening.
There was an explosion right in the doorway of the hooch. Slammed me against the bulkhead, the walls there. And then I knew shit was hitting the fan here. Scared the crap out of me, of course. I was all discombobulated.
Mayhem. I got wounded. Laying in the trench, our own artillery rounds that were stored in the ammo dump were cooking off and shooting straight up in the air and coming down on us.
We got rounds coming from the enemy. We got rounds coming from the ammo dump.
And then the CS gas that was blown out of the dump was burning, settling into the trenches because it goes to the low ground and into the bunkers.
I just thought, oh, my God, you know, you're not going to survive this, you know. Little did I know, you know, it was going to go on for 77 days.
Bravo. Common Men, Uncommon Valor is the story of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 26th Marines. It's a documentary film about a 77-day siege of Quezon, but the film speaks for all Marine veterans and every Marine who ever wore the Vietnam, every Marine who ever wore the uniform. It's a story produced by a grunt, Ken Rogers, and his wife, Betty, who was there for the entire siege. Its history over the lip of a trench is told by 14 Marines and one Navy corpsman. It's award-winning. It's available on Amazon.Prime. It's available on Amazon Prime right now. Watch it, review it, and share it. It's got great lessons for post-combat related mental health. It's the single best documentary video I've ever seen.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. You know, if you read international affairs, like, Mike Pompeo is like, he's a gift, okay? He's an absolute positive gift if you're a writer. Pretty interesting. Let me just go through a few of the articles written about his first trip. This is from, I think it's from Military Times. No, it's actually from the Associated Press. It appeared in Military Times, so Military Times, a subscriber to the service, so they can run their content. Anyway, Seoul, North Korea's Kim vows to shut nuclear test site in May. Now, rumor has it that it was collapsing. All right. That's what geologists said. Kim also told South Korean President Moon Jae-in during their historic summit on Friday that the North would have no need to keep nuclear weapons if Washington commits to formally ending the 1950 to 1953 Korean War and signs a non-aggression pact with Pyongyang. While there are lingering questions about whether North Korea will ever decide to fully relinquish its nukes, well, wait a minute. We're acting like they have them, right? As it heads into negotiations, you know what would be interesting? If he's playing a hand that he doesn't really have, that in order for them to take the next step, they may or may not be able to pull it off. But enough has been written that he can do it. And so he'll make hay while the sun shines. Anyway, while there are lingering questions about whether North Korea will ever decide to fully relinquish its nukes in negotiation with the United States, Kim's comments qualify as the North's most specific acknowledgement yet that denuclearization would constitute the surrendering of weapons. Seoul, which shuttled between Pyongyang and Washington to broker talks between Kim and Donald Trump that are expected in May or June, has said Kim has expressed genuine interest in dealing away his nuclear weapons. But there has been skepticism because North Korea for decades has been pushing a concept of denuclearization which bears no resemblance to the American definition, vowing to pressure nuclear developments elsewhere unless Washington removes its troops and the nuclear umbrella defending South Korea and Japan. As you can see, so when you talk about denuclearization, it has meant many things to many people. And it doesn't mean the same thing to the United States and North Korea. However, his comments belie a different reality. During their summit at the Border Village, Moon and Kim promised to work towards complete denuclearization of the North Korean peninsula, but no reference to verification or timetables was made. Kim also expressed optimism about his meeting with Trump, saying the president will learn he's not one to fire missiles towards the United States. Quote, once we start talking, the United States will know I am not a person to launch nuclear weapons in South Korea, the Pacific, or the United States, Kim said. Quote, if we maintain frequent meetings and build trust with the United States and receive promises for an end to the war and a non-aggression treaty, then why would we need to live in difficulty by keeping our nuclear weapons? Now, let me tell you, that's a fact, Jack. So, let me repeat this, all right? This is a quote from Kim. Quote, if we maintain frequent meetings and build trust with the United States and receive promises for an end to the war and a non-aggression treaty, then why would we need to live in difficulty by keeping our nuclear weapons? Pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. Which, you know, again, so difficulty, live in difficulty. Interesting. Questions remain about whether Kim will agree to discuss other nuclear technology, missiles. However, they imply a phased process with reciprocal concessions. So anyway, pretty interesting stuff, right? You have my attention, okay? You have my attention, cautiously pessimistic, but I would say I'm moving. See, I'm an optimist by nature. I'm an optimist. Okay, and so what does that mean? Well, what that means is I'm a believer. Okay, he has said things that none of us have ever thought he would ever say. Okay. Ever. So, yeah, so interesting to say the least. Interesting to say the least. You have my attention. All right. I said Mike Pompeo traveling around the world is a kind of a cornucopia of articles about his trip. First stop, Brussels, right? U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo rebuked Russia on Friday for what he called aggression beyond its borders and vowed to restore relevance to a badly demoralized State Department in his new role as a top American diplomat. Attending a NATO meeting of foreign ministers in Brussels less than 24 hours after being sworn in, Pompeo criticized Russia for threatening the alliance's friends and partners in Georgia and the Ukraine, as well as, quote, for an aggressive campaign to undermine Western democratic institutions. I think that falls under the headline of calling a spade a spade. And this is what, honestly, this is what I think pisses so many people off. It's like, for the last 8 years, we pretended Russia isn't doing this shit, and we've acted like a weak nation. So, anyway, Mike Pompeo. Holy smokes. The gift that keeps giving. Among other Russian misdeeds, Pompeo said, are the poisoning of a Russian spy in Britain last month, its support for Syrian leader Bashar Assad's government in Syria. Syria's accused of launching chemical weapons, blah, 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 blah. Although Syria denied responsibility. In light of Russia's unacceptable actions, NATO is more indispensable than ever. NATO should not return to business as usual with Russia until Moscow shows a clear change in its actions and complies with international law. Pompeo said that among the allies there is, quote, enormous consensus of the risk that is posed to the West and a real commitment to work together to mitigate those risks and deter them. Okay. Is there any mention of Germany getting off its freeloading ass and contributing? Commitment was made in 2014, 2% of their gross domestic product. Thus far, only 6 of 28 countries have made the pledge to meet the goal. 9 have produced realistic plans for reaching it by 2024, but the rest, to include Germany, have not. Pompeo was asked if Germany's effort to increase defense spending has been satisfactory. Pompeo's response, no. Nice! They should meet the goals that they agreed to. He said as German Chancellor Angela Merkel and President Donald Trump are meeting at the White House. Nice. But you know, again, it's just the truth. It's just the truth. All right, so that's the first article. Next stop. Next stop is Saudi Arabia. I'll read you a series of quotes from Saudi Arabia. Using the Middle East leg of his first trip abroad as America's top diplomat to call for concerted international action to punish Iran for its missiles programs. He's also urging Saudi Arabia and its neighbors to resolve a long festering dispute with Qatar that U.S. officials say Iran is exploiting to boost its influence in the region, including in Yemen and Syria. He met on Sunday, so he went from Brussels. He flew to Saudi Arabia on Saturday, met with King Salman on Sunday. I think they would all agree that it is in everyone's best interest that the Gulf states all figure out how to be together. We've got a common challenge in Iran. I think they all recognize that. We're hopeful that they will in their own way figure out how to end this dispute between the Gulf states. The former CIA chief arrived in Riyadh on Saturday, shortly after Iranian-backed Houthi rebels in Yemen fired missiles at Saudi Arabia's southern city of Jizan, killing one person and underscoring what U.S. officials said is a growing threat emanating from Iran. Okay. Again, those missiles, they come from Yemen, but they're Iranian missiles. Iran destabilizes the entire region. And again, we have the nuclear agreement with the JUST or something like that. And when Pompeo was asked about it, his response, absent a substantial fix, absent overcoming these shortcomings, the flaws of the deal, he is unlikely to stay in the deal past this May. So, then from there, the Saudi crown prince, who he himself is refashioning Saudi Arabia, right? As at some point he will assume the throne. Here's a quote. Saudi crown prince says Palestinians need to take the U.S. peace offers. Saudi Arabia's crown prince Mohammed bin Salman said Palestinians need to take peace proposals offered by the U.S. or end their complaints. The leader's comments come from a closed-door meeting in New York late last month that included the heads of Jewish organizations. Quote, in the last several decades, the Palestinian leadership has missed one opportunity after the other and rejected all the peace proposals it has been given. It is about time the Palestinians take the proposals and agree to come to the negotiating tables or shut up and stop complaining, Bin Salman told the room. This is awesome. He's a different cat, too. Bin Salman noted that Palestine was not a top priority for the Saudi government, which is more focused on issues like Iran's influence. All right, and this is kind of an interesting little article that appeared in the Daily Briefing today. Second wave of Arab revolutions inevitable, according to experts. Economic and urbanization challenges will reignite calls for change in the Arab world. So this is an Al Jazeera forum. Okay. 8 years after the so-called Arab Spring, the region is facing the prospect of another phase of results due to pressing financial urbanization and unemployment. Several Arab leaders were deposed in the aftermath of the popular 2010 and 2011 uprisings, while others' grip on power was loosened. Speaking at the 12th Al Jazeera Forum held this weekend in Qatar's capital of Doha, a number of regional experts said it was inevitable that change will come to a region with one of the world's highest percentages of youth. Quote, massive uncontrolled urbanization, pressure on job markets are among other socioeconomic factors the leading causes behind greater expectations of the youth in the Arab countries. And who's speaking? Mohammed Majoub Haroun. He's a professor of social sciences at the University of Khartoum in Sudan. Haroun identified market forces, economic stagnation, and uncontrolled and unplanned urbanization as the three main socioeconomic factors behind the Arab Spring that swept across several countries in the Middle East and North Africa. He argued that as long as these issues persist, so will the cracks and attempts to shake up the establishment ruling order in Arab societies. Speakers also identified the region's youthfulness. About half the Arab world's estimated 400 million people are below the age of 25. as another key factor in any future development in the Arab world. This, coupled with persisting grievances over lack of freedom and the rule of law in tightly controlled societies, would lead to another phase of revolutions in Arab societies, other speakers at the forum predicted. And then the next heading is violent revolts. So again, just interesting that again, the Arab Spring in the winter of 2010 and the spring of 2011, okay, populations revolted in Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, Syria, Yemen, and Jordan. Round two coming to a theater near you. One other article before the gunner comes on. This is about veteran service organizations and the GI Bill. So here's the deal. Veteran service organizations, the VFW, the American Legion, yada, 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 last summer got together and convinced Congress it was time to expand education benefits. Now, on the tails of that victory, sealed into law in the Forever GI Bill, many of those same organizations are throwing their weight behind a new cause, changing the way service members are prepared for life after the military. And let me tell you, that is sorely needed. I mean, the stuff that we do here on All Marine Radio about your resume, you know, you go to those TAP classes, they give you a class about your resume. What they should look at you and say is, don't write your own resume. Get a professional to do it, or else you're probably not going to get interviewed. What? You heard me. You're probably not going to get interviewed. Okay, so these are things you need to know about the Forever GI Bill if you don't keep up to snuff on the Forever GI Bill. Number one, there's no longer an expiration date. Previously, veterans had to use their post-9/11 GI Bill within 15 years of their last 90-day period of active duty service. That requirement is going away. This portion of the law will apply to anyone who left the military after January 1, 2013. It will also apply to spouses who are receiving education benefits through the Marine Gunnery Sergeant John David Fry Scholarship, blah, 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 blah. All right, two, Purple Heart recipients will get more benefits. The new GI Bill allows anyone who received a Purple Heart on or after September 11, 2001 to receive 100% of the benefits offered under the post-9/11 GI Bill, which includes coverage of tuition costs at a public school's in-state rate for 36 months and stipends for books and housing. Previously, Purple Heart recipients were beholden to the same timeline in service qualifications for GI Bill as other service members. This meant that Purple Heart recipients without service-connected disability who did not reach 36 months of service were only eligible for a percentage of benefits. That's crazy. Three, more people are eligible for Yellow Ribbon. The Forever GI Bill will expand eligibility to this program to surviving spouses or children of service members in August of 2018. That's awesome. There's some extra money and time for STEM degrees. Some college degrees in science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM, take longer than 4 years to complete, which is why the new law authorizes an additional school year of GI Bill funds on a first-come, first-served basis. Scholarships of up to $30,000 will be available for GI Bill users starting in August of 2018. Only veterans of surviving family or surviving family members of deceased service members are eligible for the scholarship. So, if you got it. So again, one of the complaints was that, hey, I want to be an engineer, but the GI Bill only gets me so far. It doesn't support, you know, STEM-type degrees. Number five, vets hurt by school shutdowns will get benefits back. A provision in the new GI Bill says that it will restore benefits to victims of school closures has been a long time coming quote, we've been getting calls for several years now, beginning with the collapse of Corinthian colleges. There was a chain of colleges from student veterans whose lives were put on hold. Estimated 500,000 students. So if your university closed, you got that money back. A new provision of the GI Bill offers more flexibility with the transfer and distributions of benefits in case of death. If a dependent who received transferred benefits dies before using all their benefits, this provision can gives the service member or veteran the ability to transfer the remaining benefits to another dependent. You think? What a joke. Well, you transferred it to them. They died. Nobody can use it now. That's pretty amazing. So, yeah, so if you're in the business of using GI Bills and still are looking, then make sure you, I should probably put a link to that on the website, the Forever GI Bill, okay, as it's known. So, anyway, in the aftermath of that, transition assistance. It's very interesting to track the activity of the major veteran service organizations. And that is, for instance, against privatization. The first thing when you get into that discussion is you have to define what is privatization. And then once you define what privatization is, then you can begin to have a discussion. I still have not seen the valid argument for tailoring the VA for tailoring the VA to combat-related maladies and making it world class in that area. I don't see I don't rightly understand why veterans can't go to their doctor and get treated for, you know, warts, you know, whatever, vision issues. Why do they have to go to the VA to do that? Doesn't make sense to me. And then they say, we're against privatization. Well, wait a minute. What's the choice program? Isn't that privatizing care? Well, yeah. So this whole discussion of privatizing care, again, as you begin to go down that road, it's interesting. It's interesting in terms of it doesn't. In order for you to have the conversation, you have to kind of go to home plate and get the ground rules. Okay, define this for me. Define that. Define this. Define that. So I can understand how this thing's actually going to work before we begin to play. And it's head scratching, honestly. It's head scratching, honestly, to when you try to pay attention to and make sense of the stances relative to the VA and care provided and where the VSO stands. Where the VSO stands. So again, I'm only been following these issues for a couple of years, but they still don't make a whole lot of sense with me. Let me go to a couple emails here. Two thumbs up for letting everyone know there's an option to donate. Kick ass, Mac. There's a GoFundMe and that guy who wrote that email is the one who was all over me about it. he was all over me about it. What's your problem? And the problem is, you know, when you do stuff like that, does that mean, are you begging for money? I'm not begging for money. I do All Marine Radio because it's my passion. I want it to grow. I want it to get bigger. How do you do that? Well, I will tell you, it's kind of a tough navigation. Because of broadcasting reasons, didn't become a nonprofit organization. Because if you do over the air radio, which All Marine Radio, we didn't rule that out when we began. If you do over the air radio, there's certain requirements relative to content if you're a nonprofit organization. If you do over the air. So for instance, if you're, a manager of a radio station, let's just say you're in Jacksonville, North Carolina. I can pay a few hundred dollars a month to All Marine Radio and run their content every day for 3 hours. It's current. It's topical. Marines in Jacksonville would probably enjoy listening to it. Why wouldn't I do that? I'll tell you why you wouldn't do that. So we did not include that. I would tell you after doing this for a couple years, that we will make, we will probably become a nonprofit organization. We'll have that meeting in the next 2 weeks here because it's a better model to sustain the work that we do, to raise money, to sponsor programs and education, to give awards, things like that. All that better done as a nonprofit. So anyway, you live and you learn. Everybody's got to pay bills, and so All Marine Radio no different. And so again, I appreciate the gentle nudge that I got, and stop being a prideful jackass, because there are people out here who do want to help. And for that help, let me just tell you, it's humbling, honestly. From starting this thing, going on 2 years ago in a month, so we'll start our third year in almost 30 days, in 31 days. 32 days. So we'll start our third year. And from zero, 400,000 downloads in the last year, right? 3.5 million hits to visits to the website. Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. And it only gets bigger. I'm astounded, the number of people I hear from on a daily basis now. And it's humbling, but the best part is helping people, right? This whole thing of doing transition better. The reason why All Marine Radio exists is that we don't do transition very well. I never got a class on mental health in the Marine Corps. I got taught, before I left theater, I went to a class. But I think there probably should be smart people. It should be a class that's given to Marines someplace. And I hate to do annual training, but you may go through stuff that's going to cause you a problem. Don't be afraid to put your hand up and say, I need to go to mental health. I need to talk to somebody. And so because we don't do that stuff very well, you have people like me talking about it. Don't kill yourself. Don't kill yourself. When you go down that dark road, reach out to your battle buddies. Reach out to your friends. And don't be afraid. Hey, look, if I could put up a GoFundMe account, right, you can ask for help. Right? It's not normally what we do, but there you have it. All right, well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, the Gunner's going to join us. We'll see what he was up to all weekend. Yeah, he sent me a baseball tweet. Sent me a baseball tweet. We're going to talk about that. More about Hour 3 on a Monday coming up next.
Arriving at Quezon was a real experience because the plane came in hard and fast, did an immediate U-turn, never stopping, spun a U-turn at the end of the runway, and body bags were being thrown in as you tried to go out the back tailgate. And there were people waving in trenches at the very end, telling you to get over there, get over there, get over there, and you're carrying your duffel bag, and you don't really know what's going on. Why? What's the hurry? Well, then
rockets started coming in.
When the ammo dump exploded, man, we thought it was atomic.
Our bunker was right kind of in front of the ammo dump. We was on the garbage pit side, and that first round went in. It was spooky. I didn't know what the hell was happening.
There was an explosion right in the doorway of the hooch. Slammed me against the bulkhead, the walls there. And then I knew the shit was hitting the fan here. Scared the crap out of me, of course. I was all discombobulated.
Mayhem. I had wounded laying in the trench. Our own artillery rounds that were stored in the ammo dump were cooking off and shooting straight up in the air and coming down on us.
We got rounds coming from the enemy. We got rounds coming from the ammo dump.
And then the CS gas that was blown out of the dump was burning, settling into the trenches because it goes to the low ground and into the bunkers.
I just thought, oh, my God, you're not going to survive this, you know. Little did I know, it was going to go on for 77 days.
Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor is the story of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 26th Marines. It's a documentary film about the 77-day siege of Khe Sanh, but this film speaks for all Vietnam veterans and every Marine who ever wore the uniform. It's a story produced by a grunt who was there for the entire siege. It's history over the lip of the trench as told by 14 Marines and one Navy corpsman. It's award-winning. It's not a pro-war film. It's not an anti-war film. It's available on Amazon Prime right now. Watch it, review it, and share it. I say it again. Watch it, review it, and share it. There's incredible post-combat related mental health. I should share the email. I should read the emails I've been getting from people that have watched it. I forwarded to Ken, and he's like, you know what? We had an interesting discussion about criticism. When you put your work out there, it's incredibly humbling when people receive it and they get it. But not everybody gets it, and some people react. I'll leave it at that. And when it's your work, it leaves a skid mark. It leaves a dent. And we had an interesting discussion about that. More of Almarine Radio, The Gunner, coming up next.